Behold, a podcast for the ages. Recorded live from the interdimensional terror vortex of their subterranean dwellings comes the Rough House Podcast version 3.0. Two galactic warriors put down their warhammers and battle axes to perform a more noble task. Complaining about professional wrestling on internet-purchased microphones.
Now with more Simpsons references and Kota Ibushi thirst.
This is the Rough House Podcast with Marty and Christoph.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Rough House Podcast, episode number 358 for recording date February 11th, 2024. I am Marty.
I'm Christoph, and you guys couldn't hear it, but I took like the deepest, most exasperated sigh right before we started recording this. Marty can attest.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. So let's.
I'm prefacing here.
By all means,
we're full throttle on. That was the name of a pay per view, wasn't there?
I don't know if there was a.
Or is that just a Mountain Dew? That's just a Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I think it's just Mountain Dew. Okay.
Which should have lent itself to a name of a pay-per-view. Fastlane. Absolutely. Like, that's the one.
Yeah. That's what it was.
We're on the Fastlane going full throttle, not quite full gear, to WrestleMania at this point. And I just need to say that the last 7 days, since we last recorded 7 days ago.
Yes.
The internet has broken me. It was the best and the worst of the IWC over the past 7 days. First couple days, you know, it was like a grassroots movement. We're not But then the fucking press conference happened and the mental gymnastics that I've seen trying to justify this shit has been to the, I've wanted to throw my phone against the wall every time I open that fucking app.
You're not alone.
So let's try to get that off my chest before we dig into the details of it.
I will also say good news for us trying to do a comedy or at least comedy adjacent pro wrestling podcast.
At best. That's a big stretch there, my guy.
I know, right? We don't really have anything new to say about Vince McMahon, so we can just
he's a shithead.
Over there.
Johnny Ace continues to throw him under the bus. Bruce Pritchard claims he has no idea. Shut the fuck up, you liar. Yeah. And Paul's acting like nothing happened. So that's kind of the update on that.
Yeah, but let's go ahead and hit this guy.
The World Wrestling Federation. For over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment.
Okay, so officially, as of 10:02 a.m. on Sunday, February 11th, 2024, which I think is crucial at this point to say when we're talking about this.
Life comes at you fast.
The announced main event for WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia is, graphic and all, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes for Universal Championship, whatever the fuck title
he has.
How'd we get there, Chris? Let's
I honestly do not fucking know.
So I'm going to do my best because I was trying to piece all this together and even in kayfabe try to understand it. Kayfabe and out of kayfabe. So first things first, January 1st Raw, it was day one. That's when Dwayne Johnson made his first appearance for 2024. It was not that long after his surprise appearance on a SmackDown alongside Pat McAfee, but he shows up, he whirlwind dunks on Jinder Mahal and does, you know, a spot or two, gets extremely blown up.
Yeah.
And then talks about, oh, you know what? I'm going to go out to dinner. And where do you think I should sit? I think I should put myself at the head of the table. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Indicating the direction might be Rock Roman. Makes sense. This is the match that they've been walking around and towards since that Rumble that Roman won and
2015.
You
know,
you saw Dwayne in real time. You saw his heartbreak.
No
different than Cody this past week.
Yeah, when he was unable to give the rub to the Rock to Roman in Philly, which is another crucial part of the story.
Oh, you know what? That is weird. That is weird how Philly, that is.
And so will WrestleMania
full circle. Yeah. Okay. So there's that. January 3rd, The Rock signs his deal. So 2 days later, he signs his deal to become a board member of TKO, receive $30 million in stock, and crucially, he signs to main event WrestleMania against Roman Reigns.
Now, that was a signed contract for that match.
Yes. It was part of the agreement.
Confirmed by Dave?
Confirmed by Dave Meltzer.
Okay.
Part of the contract, was part of the plan. So while that's happening, and apparently only a few people knew about all of that, not everyone knew, the road to WrestleMania, as we understood it, based off of what was on television, was, Seth Rollins defending his WWE title against CM Punk, and Cody Rhodes finishing the story in a world title match with Roman Reigns. There's your night one, there's your night two, right?
So Roman's wrestling two nights in a row.
Well, that's the thing. We don't know yet.
What that plan was.
That's also the thing. I don't know that Dwayne Roman was part of the plan that everyone else knew about. Because it sounds like the creative team was like kayfabed on all of this.
I'm failing to come up with the words as to how you as an executive now would sign to do a match to headline the biggest show of the year and not inform the creative fucking committee, or at least, you know, somebody to say, hey, you know, we can't really say why, but let's not try and head down that road creatively, you know, in a meeting. It is not a good look for the newer, I guess, regime at the top of WWE.
Fresher regime? Installed regime.
I still would like to see the, you know, whereas we got Dwayne's family tree, I would like to see the corporate hierarchy in WWE at this moment. Yeah,
who sits where at this point?
Yeah, that would be a more interesting infographic for me.
So then the week of January 22nd, the week of the Rumble, we get the announcement to the public that Dwayne is joining the board. We get the Netflix announcement.
Yeah.
Crucially, the Wall Street Journal story round two for Vince McMahon breaks. And then that Saturday is the Rumble. Cody wins the Rumble.
No Dwayne there.
No Dwayne appearance whatsoever. No indication of Dwayne. All the indications are, because, you know, this is how it's gone for most of the last 30, 35 years. Because I think it was 88 that the first Rumble was. I digress. You had the Rumble winner, and that was going to indicate who was going into the main event of WrestleMania. Last two guys in that Rumble were Cody and CM Punk.
Right.
CM Punk just moments earlier took a future shock. Yeah. He took a future shock DDT from Drew McIntyre, tricep tear, other arm this time. He's on the shelf for 6 months. So suddenly Seth Rollins does not have a main event opponent for WrestleMania.
Right.
So then we go to Monday, the Monday after. Punk says, I'm out. I can't do it. There's a promo between Seth and Cody where Seth is basically like, hey, you know, I know you're making your decision this week, all that, but like, this is the belt of the workhorse. This is the belt of the guy, not the guy who goes on vacation, but the guy who busts his ass day in and day out.
Right.
Do you want to be that guy, or do you want to be Roman? So there's this tease of like, oh, maybe Cody's going to choose the other belt. Maybe, possibly. But considering the announcement is going to be on SmackDown, you're going, all right, Cody's going to say, you know what, Roman, it's time to finish the story. And he did that Friday. That would take us to Feb 2. He did that Friday say he was going to finish the story later.
Yeah, the asterisks. That's the important part there.
So he, in kayfabe,
is a moron.
Shoot idiot right there in that scenario. He not only tells Roman, you know what? I'm not picking you. So I guess we're getting Cody versus Seth, which, by the way, was a match that was never said out loud.
No, he didn't mention any point at all.
Not at all. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to finish the story later. I'm going to take everything away from you. But before that, here's Dwayne. And The Rock comes out. The Rock gets a mixed reaction at best because the fans who for the past year have been looking forward to Cody finishing the story, becoming champion. It's what they've built on television this entire year.
That's the gimmick of the new game too. Finish the story.
It is. So it takes a backseat to Rock Roman because that is the biggest money match that they have available to them. I understand that. I understand business-wise, box office-wise, eyeballs-wise, Rock Roman on paper is a bigger deal than Cody Roman.
But that's a short, and not, and I'm not trying to, you know, offend you. That's a short-sighted way to look at this.
No, no, no. And by the way, not my personal opinion, just using wrestling promoter brain. I get it.
Right. So people are saying, yeah, box office, eyes, all this sort of stuff. That's for one, two nights, your box office. Yes. So if you do this and do Roman versus Rock and push Cody to the side, the guy that the crowd has pretty organically gotten behind, you know, even after him being knocked down on his ass and rubber chickened in the ring last year, you know, he has brought the crowd along with him on this long road to be in this spot and have this opportunity again. So if you, you know, kick that to the side, then you alienate the people who are fucking there every week, buying your tickets, buying your merch, you know, all this other bullshit. Why would you, you know, piss off your diehards to get in a couple extra, I remember The Rock, you know, people ordering a pay-per-view or logging in the Peacock or something. Exactly. It doesn't make sense in that respect to me. It's fucking stupid.
No disagreement. This is also sort of the age old version of the thing we've been talking about a lot, which is, you know, trying to embrace the new in pro wrestling that as we've talked about quite a few times on here, you and I should feel alienated by wrestling. We've been watching wrestling for decades. We should see things.
I do.
Well, I mean, not because of disgust, but because it's like, oh, this is more for the kids than it is for me, you know?
Well, yeah, that's why I raised my nose to my nephew when he said he watched WWE. I'm like, ugh, peasant.
But I mean,
you know, fucking child.
Any other sport on the planet. Any other sport on the planet, they aren't going, you know what? It's the Super Bowl. Let's get Tom Brady out of retirement for one last game. Like, that's not how it works.
Right.
In any other sport, there's a new generation of guys.
What was that with Joe Flacco a couple of weeks ago?
I mean, there was a little bit of that, but, you know, that'd be like, I don't know, Dustin Rhodes getting an AEW world title shot. You know, it's like, okay, well, I guess. Anyway.
Or him going 15 minutes with Swerve. Come the fuck on.
Anyway. So that clearly does not go the way that anyone wants. Cody has a very hard time hiding his boo-boo face.
I mean, would you? I would, I'm not that good of an actor. Yeah, Cody's clearly not, because he is fighting the back.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, Ralph Wiggum paused at the fucking Krusty show. Pinpoint the moment when his heart breaks.
If you haven't watched the most recent Botchmania, someone did that.
Of course they did. That's great.
It's perfect. Complete with the like advancing of his sad face. Ah, it's so good. Anyway, so the crowd turns on The Rock a little bit.
Yeah.
And Friday night into Saturday morning.
Outrage.
Outrage all over Twitter. Hashtag we want Cody.
Yeah.
All these different things are blowing up. By Saturday afternoon, Logan Paul is tweeting about it, saying he wants to see Cody finish the story. And it's at that point where I go, oh, fuck, they're co-opting it.
Yep.
Because by the end of the weekend, fucking Ricochet's talking about it. And I don't know if there's more clear of an indication that this is a work than Ricochet trying to involve himself in a storyline for perhaps the first time in his life. That's that right there.
Yeah, yeah. Not too many flips on that guy.
We go to Monday. We have Raw. Cody goes against Shinsuke Nakamura in a bull rope match because that feud cannot end for some reason.
Uh-huh.
And the crowd starts, you know, getting really behind Cody again. I think they're even we want Cody chants. There were certainly signs and some may have been planted.
I'm sure most of them probably were.
But nevertheless, it's like, okay, this is the weird situation we're in. And they set up this quote unquote press conference for I believe it was Thursday.
It was Thursday. So
in Las Vegas.
This is a new thing. I guess this is a part of the TKO thing because UFC and stuff like boxing matches, they do these press conference / weigh-ins ahead of big events or something. Yeah. I mean, obviously, this is more of a announcement of what's happening at Mania, but it's the same sort of mindset going into it here. And it was, I don't know, it was in Vegas because of Super Bowl, I guess.
Exactly. The thought process was it was in Vegas. There are people in town for the Super Bowl. There's going to be more press there. There's going to be more eyes on it. From my understanding, a lot of WWE talent that was in town ended up doing as they call it, Radio Row, because there's so many different radio stations, syndicated programs, news outlets, etc. They took advantage of that. Smart. I can't shit on that. It is, however, really fucking weird that they booked an entire fucking arena for what boiled down to a bunch of promos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so they have this event, which isn't a press conference at all, because there's no
question
interaction with the press. Yes, press was invited.
Yeah.
But they're in T-Mobile Arena, which is like a 15,000 person arena, and they apparently did sub dynamite numbers in terms of how many people were there. So good on you. And the other thing about this is,
were they selling tickets or was it a free event?
They were selling tickets.
Oh, get fucked.
Including a $2,500 tier. I'm not making this up.
Get fucked.
So they have this as this paid event.
Wow.
In a fifth full arena.
Right.
You can't book the T-Mobile on a whim. So they already knew that they wanted to do something.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was going to just be the Cody and Roman show at that point. But they have this whole, I mean, yeah, like they built to, you know, Becky and Rhea Ripley, you know, all these different things. I think it was Bailey and Io did their thing. Seth was there. Seth doesn't have an opponent yet.
Oh, Seth got mega chomped.
Well, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
And then they had this whole to do with The Rock and Roman and Heyman. And it's putting over the main event of WrestleMania, Rock versus Roman, graphic and all.
Okay.
And Roman's, sorry, not Roman, Rock's putting over the match, all these different things. He's putting over the history they have with each other. They have this massive graphic that gets absolutely zero reaction.
I was like, this looks like homework. Thanks, right, Dwayne.
Of the family tree of the Samoans. So the we now have an actual in kayfabe version of the entire Inoue family tree.
Great.
And I'm trying to figure out how to explain this most logically because it doesn't make any fucking sense. Cody comes out. He wants the match against Roman.
But he already seeded his match.
He already seeded his match and said, I don't want the match.
Right. So
now he's saying he wants the match.
No take backs, brother. What are you doing? Like,
That's not how this works. The graphics team already did something. Like, come on, it's locked in.
They're overworked as it is. Come on.
The Rock gets pretty consistently booed during this. And admittedly, he was kind of goading it on. He did an appearance on the Pat McAfee show earlier in the day where he was talking about, quote unquote, the Cody crybabies.
Yeah, and I saw a clip of this, and the dude is using the same material he had in 2001 or whenever the fuck it was. Yeah. It's come on, man, get some new material. You get Gerwitz to write you some shit. You have your own production company. Have somebody feed you some lines, because you know off the top of your head, you're just spouting the same old dreck.
Yeah, and what was interesting to me was watch Dwayne's face throughout this. Because he's having an Well, if you choose to. You, Chris, or you, dear listener.
Yeah.
Dwayne's having an out-of-body experience. He's like, this is fucking Philadelphia 2015 all over. Like, you can see it in his eyes. He's like, yeah, it's fucking happening again.
Again, he's not that good of an actor either, so.
This is supposed to be the salve on what has been a really fucked up number of years for Dwayne Johnson's career.
Well, not only that, he's also come in as the White Knight to distract everybody from, you know, the heinous acts in the lawsuit. So, yeah, he's failing on both sides.
I will say people are talking a lot more about this as opposed to all the Vince stuff. But I think that's also because really we haven't had anything new come out. Just confirmations of things. Anyway.
We're also really plugged in, so.
Everyone starts brawling. There's a hole to do. Seth gets involved.
Because he's now, there just sitting there looking like a chump.
So I'm sitting there going, are we going to run fucking night one Cody and Seth against Roman and Rock? Which could still happen at this point.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's a match that no one wants. Like that's negative interest. It feels like a fucking house show preview match.
Yeah.
So like running that on night one, sorry, Philly, you get a lame duck night one, I guess.
Sorry, boys.
So not only is this just an incomprehensible mess, they then start shooting, brother.
Oh, God.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because Triple H is flipping out about how, you know, how did you phrase it? It was one of those turns of phrase where it's like, you know, they're going into business for themselves. That's the phrase he used.
He actually used that phrase?
Yes. Triple H, Paul Levesque is fucking Vince Russo-ing this angle. Wow. Like, I am absolutely agreed with an observation from Dave Meltzer when I say this is on par with there was a WCW pay-per-view toward the end where it was Scott Steiner versus Goldberg, and Scott grabbed a mic, said he was supposed to job, and he refuses to, and he leaves. And the fucking commentator's going, well, that wasn't in the script. What do we do now?
Wow. Just shattering all illusions.
And then Triple H posts on Twitter, oh, well, here's the main event, and there's a graphic for Cody Roman. Why did we have to do all of this?
Because this wasn't planned. They're backpedaling.
Clearly.
And that's why. So, you know, the people out there on the latter part of the week who were like, oh, this was the plan from the very start. We never saw a match graphic for Roman versus Rack. They were going to do this the whole time, and Cody's going to finish the story. I was like, shut the fuck up. They clearly went with the bigger box office match and then heard the reaction and then like, oh, we fucked up. Let's fix this. Shit. Yeah. And, you know, I also feel like Triple H is going to fucking use this to WrestleMania 30, this all over again. Like, it's another Daniel Bryan situation. B-plus player, not going to get his title match. Well, he's going to get his title match and win at WrestleMania. Like, you know, it's just like, it's been 10 years and he was heavily involved in that. Hopefully won't be physically involved in this shit as well.
I start to wonder for like 10 seconds during that whole to do, oh fuck, are they going to do Cody Triple H against Rock Roman? Is Triple H going to wear a really tight blue Under Armour shirt? Tight Under Armour shirt to hide the heart surgery scar. Like, boy.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It feels like we took this entire detour for no reason whatsoever. I mean, even from the jump, they were fucked, because if the plan was back on January 3rd, they're going to do Rock Roman. Don't have Cody win the Rumble.
Thank you.
It's easy. You just don't have him win. Have Punk win and call out Seth, or, you know, have Dwayne have to show up and work the last 5 minutes of a Rumble.
Right.
There's any number of different things. Like, whatever you could have done, like, you could just have whoever's going to go in Seth. I mean, yeah, it was supposed to be Punk, but like, oh, maybe you change your mind and you want Drew to do it, or you want Gunther to do it.
Yeah.
Or have Cody win. Have Cody go against Seth. He like just listens to him on Monday and goes, you know what? You're right. I'm going to prove I'm the best. And then I'm going after Roman.
Right.
Then that would make a little more sense.
Yeah. Then he could unify the titles or whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. And even as recently as this last weekend, I think we talked about it on the show last week.
I'm sure
we could have just done Rock Roman night one, Roman Cody night two, just cleared it up on Monday.
Yeah.
And instead they're like, oh, by the end of the press conference, you'll know what the main event is.
Here's a loop. Here's another loop, another hoop to jump through. And it's exhausting. Like
it is.
It's instead of just A to B, it's pew, 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 you know, getting there. All these different sidetracks and detours and unnecessary wrinkles to this story.
Meanwhile, on the other channel, on the other promotion, which we'll talk about more in a minute, a company that is being described by multiple people online as not having stories has the most clear and obvious main event story you can think of. Yeah. There's a champ. There's two guys who were top contenders. They went to a draw because no one won. We're doing a triple threat.
Easy. It's like pro wrestling 101.
Yeah. Connect the dots. You're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this, they're just like zooming all over everywhere. Like
it's exhausting.
The shortest distance between two points is a straight line, guys.
That's right.
No. All you need to do. That's all you need to do.
This WWE we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, take the hard way. Fucking everything.
Maybe with their new show coming to Twitter this spring, WWE Speed, they can not fuck things up with only 5-minute matches.
They will.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't worry.
Hey, let's hit this button since we haven't hit it in a while.
Oh, yeah, big morning over there, or big night over there. Big night,
yeah.
Here. It says goodbyes. I think we had a new champ or two or something.
Yeah, the new beginning in Osaka was bright and early our time. Big show, like you said. I'm going to talk about it. Yeah. Sorry. We got the final Okada Tanahashi match for now.
Yeah. Could be forever, but probably not.
All indications was it was very good. Surprisingly, Okada won.
Yeah, no, I'm not that surprised. Let's be honest.
I have seen some conspiracy theories online that Okada refused a job to the New Young Lions.
I get that. If I'm on my way out and I'm raising my stock, I'm not jobbing to some fucking newbies. Although I feel like for this match, I feel like it was Tana who pushed to take the L there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that seems like the kind of guy he is.
That would make a lot of sense. That reminds me, Tsuji on one of the Road 2 shows says he's coming for the belt. So,
okay.
Yeah, let's pull the fucking trigger on that guy. Let's do the thing. We have
he's in LIJ, isn't he?
He is.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. We have new IWGP heavyweight tag champions as the Guerrillas of Destiny of El Fantasmo and Hikuleo drop the belts to Chase Owens and Kenta.
Oh, man, the Bullet Club is just
they're
sad
at
this point.
They're in a spot.
It is sad.
The Observer review begins with, "This was a stinker from these teams." we got Danielson ZSJ round two as Zack Sabre Jr. ties it 1-1 in the series.
With a pin and not a submission.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. He also, after the match, started gesturing at his waist. So it looks like he is going to be going against the winner of Sonata Naito later in this new beginning tour.
You know what? If it ain't Tsuji, strap up ZSJ.
He just did a promo on one of the go-to shows about like, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be the guy. Like he's straight up saying he wants to be the guy. So,
I mean they're in the dire need of top guys. So,
And then the main event
lost two today.
Then the main event was the Legally Distinct War Games match. As it was the Bullet Club
War Japanese equivalent of War Games.
Yes. Is the Bullet Club War Dogs of Alex Coughlin, Clark Connors, David Finley, Drilla Maloney, and Gabe Kidd against United Empire group of Francisco Akira, Hanare, Jeff Cobb, TJP, and of course, Will Ospreay. This was Will's final match in again for this run.
Signed to New Japan. Yeah.
Yeah. In New Japan Pro Wrestling. It came down to Ospreay versus the entire Bullet Club team.
Oh, wow.
Everyone else got eliminated. There was a lot of blood. There was barbed wire tables. There were forks. They did the gimmick where they take the ring mat up and expose the boards. They did everything. And apparently it went like an hour. Jeez. So, you know, a lot of stuff going on there. David Finley wins by hitting his finish on Will Ospreay.
Makes sense.
Post-match, of course, Ospreay does his big farewell. Thank you. Promise I'll be back, promo. But, yeah, that's the end of, Will Ospreay for now in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that, you know, on one day, they lose two top guys.
Right.
Who have also been intrinsically linked for a very long time.
Yeah. I think Okada still has a few dates left.
Does he?
Yeah. I think he's supposed to be.
Oh, so this was just his last match with Tana as it was.
Yes. Yes.
I see.
I think he's supposed to be on the other two.
Gotcha.
New beginning shows, but I can't recall if he had matches announced for it. Gotcha. And it'll be interesting to see like where he goes, because we still don't know officially. Like the belief is AEW made the stronger play because WWE did the if he's gonna come here, he's gonna come here move.
Right.
So we'll see that. And I'll have some speculation on that as we go into this next section. AEW had a hell of a week of television this week, Chris. Genuinely, Dynamite might have been, and you can argue a few different ones, but this might have been the best front to back Dynamite ever.
It's definitely in the conversation.
And it started very strong. They were live in Phoenix, Arizona. It started very strong. Nuts. Yes. I actually had some friends who were in the crowd, and they talked about just how ridiculously hot it was all night long.
Just turn the air conditioning on.
But they kicked it off with the match for the title shot at Revolution, both tied undefeated in 2024, Swerve Strickland and Hangman Adam Page. The third match in their trilogy of matches,
yeah,
and it went to a 30-minute time limit draw.
By 1 second. That's, I mean, look, the match itself was fantastic. These guys obviously have chemistry that's off the charts.
Yes.
And the skill and, you know, the ability to time it, and I'm sure you can kayfabe it a little bit, the timing of this sort of thing, but
it was 30 minutes and 6 seconds.
Of course he did. But still, you know, in execution, it was perfect.
Yeah. I would have to go back and rewatch the first two matches to say what is my favorite of the trilogy, but this was fucking great.
Yeah.
And I was a little worried. I don't think I voiced it on here, but I was a little worried. Like, that second match was this, you know, probably going to be a legendary bloodbath. Yeah, and
ultra violence.
The idea that, the next round, that's just a match.
Yeah.
On paper, you're like, is that really going to work? But it was intense from the jump.
There's so much ire and hate there that they are able to pull it off.
And they're both super over with the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, either guy could have won and people would have responded well, I think. But what was masterful is we also got a double turn here.
Yeah.
They recognized what they have in Swerve and made him the face, because at the end of the 30 minutes, the whole gimmick was Swerve grabbed a mic, said he wants 5 more minutes. Hangman takes the mic back and he goes, no. You were supposed to beat me on your own and you couldn't. We're not doing 5 more. You just can't beat me.
It makes that was the agreement. That was, you know, it's justified.
Yeah.
Completely, but it's still justified. Kind of a motherfucker move.
right? Which the crowd let him know, and he reacted in kind. Like the heel response through the match, because I think the crowd was a little more on the Swerve side than the Hangman side.
Yeah, really
guys, but this bell to bell was awesome. They built it so well, and just God, I could watch these guys go against each other 1,000 times. I think.
And we will. We'll see. It'll happen a bunch more times. I feel like after the triple threat at Revolution, they'll probably, unless Paige, my guess is Swerve wins. So unless Paige is the first challenger for the title, which I feel like Hangman probably shouldn't eat any more pins from, although he probably will in the match, in the triple threat is how I picture that going down, but separate them for a little bit. And then he's always kind of have Swerve be looking over his shoulder at all times for Hangman.
Especially now that he has
the title. My question / concern is I understand and respect Swerve's overness. I'm just curious is he just a face when he's against Hangman? Because his kind of whole presentation and personality, Nana aside, is not very face-like at all.
Aside from
the Black History promo that he cut, which is a super babyface thing the week 1,000%
babyface thing. That's a good question. And we'll see how he leans into it. Because, even the first Continental Classic match he had, which was right after the bloodbath, him and Jay Lethal, he played face there. And there were more than a few times throughout the tournament where he played face.
Sure. But working in the ring is one thing, but building the stories and personality outside of the ring, that's my, and I'm not saying he can't pull it off because he can. It's just, how are they going to adapt this character that he is at this moment to be the babyface?
A totally understandable ask, because we've also seen countless times in pro wrestling that the chase is what's exciting.
Yeah.
Guy gets the belt, and when it is, that white meat baby face dude,
that's Hangman.
That was
his reign.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was champ, and I will continue to just rattle on the idea that the version of Hangman we saw at the end, where he was just motherfuckering Punk on the mic, there was some reason he was doing that. that's what I wanted out of him. I wanted to be a take no shit guy. Like, fuck it, I'll fight you. I will punch you in the fucking mouth and we'll have a world title match. Like, I don't give a shit. I liked that.
Yeah.
Until then, it was very much like, oh, well, Coley's champ. I guess go and get Adam Cole now. That's fine. I thought the matches were good. There was that missing spark that you had on the way up for him. Will that happen to Swerve? I don't know. So post-match, they had their back and forth, and Tony Schiavone does the, hey, Tony told me to tell you guys something. So we had the Tony to Tony Express, and he made it very, very clear. Triple threat
just at Revolution. Away.
And then we went to Samoa Joe in the back.
Not happy
with Renee Paquette. Samoa Joe at this point is just kingpin. Like that's what they're doing here. And I'm
big suits, big guy, well spoken, angry, but not yelling, upset, but in that calm kind of, I'm going to fucking murder you sort of way.
Scarier.
Yes. Very much so. Like,
it's whatever to him. Right. But, he hit the nail on the head. Like, neither guy won. They didn't beat each other. Like, there's no reason why they should go against me. Like, I want to face people who win. Like, I thought that was perfect. I will tell you my theory for the finish at Revolution.
Okay.
Joe chokes out Hangman.
Oh.
So Joe retains.
Okay.
But then the build to Double or Nothing is, you didn't beat me. So then we have Swerve Joe and Swerve wins in a one-on-one. That's my thought. Might not be what they do.
Yeah.
Totally not be what they do.
No, that makes sense.
That's my thought, because it gets a little more, juice out of it. And I think having Swerve win in a one-on-one match would be a better start to his reign than in a triple threat. So after that, we then had Tony Storm against Red Velvet, which I thought was fine. I thought it was a perfectly fine match. Deonna Purrazzo on commentary showed more personality on commentary than she has in the entire build to this match.
Yeah. There were a couple moments where, you could tell she was acting in her reactions to what was happening. Yeah. In terms of actually making me a little more interested for this match, it was successful.
Yeah. Also, something I thought was funny was you got to find out just how Italian she was, because they cut to her, cut their shot of her at the booth, and she's very much talking with her hands while doing commentary. It's like,
She had played a gabagool right in front of her too, so you couldn't see that. True. It was on the table. She was splitting it with Taz. They went halvesies on a deli platter.
Renee was then backstage with Orange Cassidy, Trent Beretta, and the smartest man in pro wrestling, Rocky Romero. That's how I'm calling him from now on. He's the smartest man in pro wrestling.
Rocky Romero. Now he sounds Italian.
Sorry, Bobbert, you've been replaced.
Rocky Romero. The gravy on the stove.
This was really just a bit of a comedy segment to put over the match against Ishii, put over the six-man tag on Rampage, put it over the fact that Orange Cassidy just keeps wrestling nonstop. And then, Chuck is hurt. I did enjoy Renee having everyone come in for the hands. And
yeah.
I thought that was wonderfully awkward. That was very enjoyable. And then we had the BCC of John Moxley, Brian Danielson, and Claudio Castagnoli going against the CMLL trio of Máscara Dorada, Volador Jr., and Hechicero.
Yeah, man.
I'm not going to say it was a perfect match by any means. There were definitely moments where you could see, like, John Moxley go, oh, shit, they work the other side here, you know? And some spots didn't hit as well as they could.
Yeah.
But I'm loving this feud, man. Like, this is so fun.
Stylistically, it's just such a great mesh to, you know, the technical brawling of the BCC to the, Lucha Llave type work of the CMLL guys. I was a little leary about the CMLL thing to begin with, but I foot in mouth in that, because this shit has been pretty, pretty, pretty great.
And then post-match, Mystico, Star Jr., and I'm going to fuck this up. So,
it's a weird name.
Esfinge? Whatever it is. The three luchadors who were shown ringside, lucha mask, suit, always looks cool. They jump in the ring. There's more of a brawl. And then Matt Sydal, Chris Daniels, and 2.0 come out as the
Job Geek Squad
Brigade continues.
Yeah, there you go.
Then we go to the back as Chuck Taylor is being beat down by the Undisputed Kingdom. So that's what they got for the Undisputed Kingdom.
Yeah. I mean, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care about no offense to Chuck. I don't care.
Chuck has done nothing on television in a very long time.
Right. Yeah.
So, as much as I like the best friends, and I still think they deserve a gold watch tag title shot.
Sure.
Just for carrying the Daily's Place era.
Yeah.
This meant nothing. Because you have, in my eyes, a pretty lame duck group in the Undisputed Kingdom, and they're beating down a guy who hasn't worked a match on television in probably a year at this point. So it means nothing.
Yeah, I'm not super into it. I just wish this Roddy and OC thing would happen sooner so we could move on to something a little more interesting.
So Tony Khan was backstage and he had a big sandwich. Sorry, not big sandwich, big announcement.
There you go.
He said, you might have heard earlier today that Dynamite's coming to the TD Garden in Boston on March 13th, because someone posted on Facebook that wasn't supposed to.
Yeah.
And he said, on that important night, it will be AEW Big Business.
Uh-huh.
One of the most important nights in AEW history, and one the entire pro wrestling industry will remember. The graphic then appears on screen, and you can see under the Big Business logo to the left, Boston.
Yes.
With two S's that are dollar signs.
Yeah.
So it is clear to me this is where they're debuting Kazuchika Okada.
Sure. Yeah. No, 100%. The boss of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
The most money making man right there.
Yeah. Like he
has money fly all the time. It's him.
The Rainmaker. Yeah.
Noted 100%. Bostonian. because he's still Okada.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a big fan of, the American Revolutionary period. He's
a
history major.
A lobster roll.
Yeah.
Seriously, sorry, go ahead.
Just a very quick sidetrack to Boston. Have you watched the TED series?
No. Is it yes, good?
It's fucking hysterical.
Okay.
Would recommend. Right. I did not expect anything from it, but I have been rolling watching. So it gets a two thumbs up from this guy as we're talking about Boston.
Good to know. Because I peek in, I recognize Seth MacFarlane just does voices on it now.
Yeah.
There's no creative input really. I pop in on Family Guy every so often.
Oh God, I haven't watched an episode of Family Guy in years.
It is such a mixed bag, man.
Yeah.
There's some stuff that is very good. There's some stuff where it's just like, why is this a story that they're exploring?
Yeah.
So I was a little wary of them going back to the Ted well, because I liked the first movie and the second one, less said about the better. It was just a total, I watched it. I couldn't tell you what happened. It was like, oh, there's more Ted. That's cool. I think they were at a Comic-Con at some point. That's all I got. Remember.
Yeah.
But to talk about big business. All right. Yeah. It's Sasha. It's Mercedes Moné.
Sure.
Sorry for the spoilers, guys.
I mean, if you're listening to this show, you probably knew that already.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Very nice. And it's also clear, by the way, with Dynamite Rampage and Collision having more women's matches than ever.
Yeah,
they're trying to build up a women's division for Mercedes to go against. Even though I know she's from there, I have never once identified Boston with Sasha Banks. Punk Chicago is like,
sure,
so obvious. And they made, the Michael Jordan reference,
right?
First Dance. It was like, oh, okay. It's very clear. I'm back. Like, That was obvious. It says something that they needed a really, really big textual
Easter egg. Yeah.
On the graphic to make people go, oh, yeah, that's right. It's Sasha.
Yeah. Well, Punk has, ingrained Chicago into his character.
Right.
And Sasha never really did that. She was just I always thought I knew she was from Boston, but she always seemed more like an LA type character.
Absolutely.
And not just because of her affiliation with Snoop, but like the way she presents herself had as always that Cali state of mind. Yeah.
Right.
The big LA sort of thing.
Yeah. So it's an interesting choice. Also, they're playing this up like it's the big debut, and don't get me wrong, is, but she was at Wembley.
But not under contract. She was just there watching the matches.
I'm just saying, they at least in universe, she already was here. So it's not right. If CM Punk had months before the United Center show been seen in the crowd at Double or Nothing,
sure,
it would have absolutely killed the level of interest. Not right. That people wouldn't be interested. It's just like, you're not going to get a day one sellout and 2 million people watching Rampage again.
But at this point, it's the worst kept secret in professional wrestling. Unless you're, Karrion Kross 05852 on Twitter, who's repeatedly, tweeted at as Sean Ross Sapp saying, oh, I thought she was going to be on Dynamite this week. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, this one is way more obvious, but the question is, do they do a Double or Nothing 2020, whatever it was, and debut both Mercedes and Okada on the same show?
It would make sense. It would make sense to do that, to have the fake out. I will also suggest another fake out they could do.
Okay.
Have Tony Schiavone in ring. Have Tony Schiavone say, we're very, very excited to bring this person to the ring. She's going to be a shot in the arm to the women's division here in AEW. And it's fucking Britt Baker, because she hasn't been on television in months.
Okay.
The heat she would get from, and granted, that's where you turn it into.
Yeah.
Here's Mercedes. Here's the to do, because Britt hasn't been on TV in months.
Yeah.
So you could do that. You could pull, and also Tony Schiavone being the one in the ring. Yeah.
No, it's perfect.
You juice her up, you know? Yeah. So I think that would be kind of a fun bait and switch. I will say,
Go ahead.
I will say if they do Okada and Mercedes, Okada has to be the first one out of the two.
That's what I was going to address. I feel like you can't do it the same way you did Cole and Brian because, you know, Cole came out first and then it was fucking Brian and everybody forgot about Cole. You know, if you're presenting these two people as, you know, the next round of, you know, all elite players here, then I don't think you do it in the same segment. I think maybe you kick off the show with the ladies bit. And then something happens at the end of the show when fucking Okada comes out. Or vice versa. Or you could do it in either way. And, you know, again, wrestling Twitter being the worst, I was like, oh, when's the last time the women main evented a Dynamite? What kind of division is she coming into? What kind of match is she going to have? Is she going to be losing a Rampage in 3 months like everybody else? Shut the fuck up.
I mean, maybe. what acknowledgement you want? You know?
Not likely.
Sure. Might be.
Yeah.
It's just wrestling. Like, not everyone is exciting forever. Like that's wrestling. No, it's
peaks and valleys. You have your run, you take a back seat, you know.
But you get worn back up again.
It's cyclical.
So we had Konosuke Takeshita against Chris Jericho.
In a apparent 4.5-star match? Dave. Get out of here.
Yeah. I don't agree with that. Takeshita is
great. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. One of the best workers in the world.
The alpha.
Jericho is actively losing steps in front of us every week.
Yeah, dude. He needs to. Well, I mean, stop doing some of those moves. Like, you're 50 fucking 3, 4, 5 years old. Yeah. Stop trying to hit a lion salt. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And kudos to Jericho for putting Takeshita over. You know, I was very worried. Less kudos to Sammy Guevara for chair shotting
Hobbs.
Whew, you know, in 2024, knowing what we know now, that was rough. Did you
hear Shivani's reaction to it? Like audibly, like, oh fuck.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Which I mean, that tells you a lot right there, right?
Is it Sammy's fault, or was Hobbs supposed to get his hands up and didn't? I mean, to shoot blame Sammy Guevara here.
Right.
He's a very easy target, but.
And I recognize that Sammy was taken out by the Callis family a few weeks ago, but I gotta be honest, when Sammy ran down, I literally was like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, I know.
And here's the other thing, and I think this is a valid criticism that people have had about AEW. Okay, Takeshita beat Jericho, and they're playing it off like it's a big thing. And they're also talking about how, you know what? He beat Kenny Omega.
Twice
in a week.
Yeah.
6 months ago. It was August.
Yeah, I mean, but still. It's still
I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but like, what has he done since?
Well, they're trying to make you forget that by calling back to the time he beat.
Recognize, but he can be a future star for the company if they put him on TV.
Yeah.
Like is it a concern he can't cut promos? One, Don Callis is right
there.
What
Don Callis is for, yeah.
Two, he's not going to get better by not talking.
Yeah.
And he beat Jericho. Did the crowd respond as if it was this big career making win? No, they were more confused because probably there was a part of that crowd that went, oh yeah, that guy. When he came out.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool that he got to use the Walls of Jericho and he made a comment on Twitter about now calling him the Walls of Takeshita. Which I'm fine with. Yeah, like run with that.
If you beat a veteran with their own move, that move is yours now.
Yeah. You've stolen it. The power's transferred to you, Highlander style.
Yes.
Also, Takeshita's build does kind of lend himself to looking right with the walls, as opposed to what we had in recent years, where it's just a Boston Crab version that Jericho had been doing. I think it's cool that he won, but the key thing in all of this is
follow up.
How do they follow it up? What do they do next? Like, if I had my druthers, which is a wonderful turn of phrase to hear in a pro wrestling podcast, probably never been said on one before.
I'm sure we've said it before. Get out of here.
I would have had Takeshita like come in second or third in the Continental Classic if I wanted to maintain momentum.
Like, yeah, he kind of got chumped out in the CC, didn't he?
He wasn't even in it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly my point.
That is the problem. He wasn't in it. And I also recognize that they are like trying to salvage the Jericho Omega against Don Callis family story because Omega's out.
Did you really have to, though? No,
we could have all moved on and warmed it back up when Kenny was back. It's all you needed to
do. You very quickly went into Jerry Seinfeld in that last sentence.
Well, I had to do.
We could have all moved on. Pizza Valleys.
And then the main event was the tornado tag match for the tag team titles, as was Ricky Starks and Big Bill defending against Sting and Darby Allin. I don't know how many people are going to agree with this. This is one of my matches of the year already. This was fucking awesome.
This was pretty so wild.
This was so much fun.
I mean, it was pretty fucking crazy considering, you know, the age of Sting doing all those stupid crazy dives off of concourse stands and shit.
Yeah.
And Big Barrel just catching a toe-paying Darby and doing the most wicked big boss slam I've ever seen in my life on the outside was if that's not in the Dynamite opening graphic next week, then they done fucked up.
Big Bill was making me in real time regret bad things I've said about him over the years.
I know
you've been behind Large William since pretty much his
only since he became Big Bill, right? He was just W. Morrissey coming in. I had wanted nothing to do with him.
Right. I know you've been an early supporter of him, and my eyes had been open to him throughout, but like in this storyline into this match, it just was like, oh my God, this guy's actually really fucking good. Like
day one is Big Bill. That's me. Yeah, I'm putting that on a t-shirt.
But like, also there were some crazy visuals like him, you know, trying to get back in the ring with fucking Darby hanging off of his back. It's so crazy. They also made me bite for Starks pinning Sting toward the end.
Yeah.
I think he hit the spear for the finish.
Spear he hit on Sting was fucking mwah.
And Sting was just fucking waiting to hit that 2.999. Like
Eddie barely got that shoulder up too, man. Yeah. It was
about to have another Sammy fucks up and put Sting for a table moment. I thought that was
Sting who fucked up. Sting was supposed to get
out of that.
But still.
Yeah.
He would probably did it on purpose.
Gonna blame Sammy. Come on.
This is what we do here.
This was so much fun. And then they won the tag belts. And he had this great feel good moment because his kids who look absolutely like failed clones of him.
Yeah. It's like Universal Soldier.
It's like the guy who they got to play Christopher Walken's son in Batman Returns. Where it's like, you're just a bad impression of them. Like
baby Shrek.
I can't even remember a line, but there's a read that actor has where he tries to, gain sympathy from his father. He's like, Dad.
It's the
worst Chris Walken impression you've ever heard.
At that point, they should have just gotten Jay Moore.
Right. Come on.
Come on, Tim Burton.
But big feel-good moment. They had the
confetti cannons.
And everything was awesome. And here comes Matthew and Nicholas Jackson to ruin it for everybody wearing all white suits.
Yeah, so you know what's going to happen.
Darby hits a gusher.
Yeah.
And the boys just get covered in his blood.
Yeah, it's like a Guar show in there.
Yeah. They beat up Sting. They beat up Sting's kids. Yeah. Not the daughter. The daughter was like, I'm staying on this side of the rail. Yeah, I'm good.
I've seen. I've watched pro wrestling before.
Yeah. Nothing good comes of this. And it was this great heel moment to end the show.
Yeah.
I thought they did a wonderful job of building towards this match at Revolution.
Yeah. And they hit an EVP trigger.
Yeah, yes. The new name of the BTE trigger.
Love it.
Yeah. Love so it. Good. So good. I have no notes beyond it was awesome.
Yeah.
Then we had
Rampage.
Rampage, as it was the Undisputed Kingdom of Roddy Strong, Mike Bennett, and Matt Taven against Orange Cassidy, Trent Beretta, and Rocky Romero. I've yet to watch Rampage, so I'm just going to run through the results here.
Yeah, no, I haven't watched Rampage in forever. So
Undisputed Kingdom won. It was
Pin Rocky.
Yes, pin on Rocky with Matt Taven being the one to
Jesus.
To get the pin. We had the Young Bucks against two jobbers named Mondo Rocks and Robbie Litt. They're not quite Turbo Floyd territory.
But no, no, they're close, though.
Yeah, they're close. They had the suits on still. They were still covered in blood.
They have Nick the new Jackson, entrance music.
They have new entrance music, which sounds absolutely like the theme of Succession, which...
Yep.
Nice touch.
Perfect. And
Nick wrestled with a Kangol hat on the entire time.
Nicholas.
Sorry, Nicholas. Yes. Nicholas. Apologies.
Yes.
Apologies. Passport name.
Yes.
Mystico defeated Matt Sydal. Okay. As we do the whole CMLL stuff. And then our
running
main
back
event.
A match from Velocity on fucking.
You know, right? There was a backstage interview where Brian Cage took issue with Hook hitting him with a chair, and he then challenged, quote, any two sloppy Joes to face him in a handicap match on Collision. And then the main event.
I hope a team comes out called the Sloppy Joes. It's Joe Mama and Joe Butts, and they come out just looking like they just have been drinking all night and woke up on a friend's couch. The Sloppy Joes.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Fucking hire Chris, guys. Like,
just, I'm right here. I'm an idea guy.
Yeah. Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander defeated Saraya and Ruby Soho in the main event. The main bit story beat of it all is that Ruby Soho officially left the Outcasts. She jumped off the ring apron when Saraya went for a tag, and then Ruby knocked over Cameron. Post-match in the win, they had Sky Blue and Julia Hart, you know, taunt Willow and Chris because that feud must continue. And okay. Then last night was thanks Elton.
Saturday.
Yeah. They were
Sir Elton.
Live in Las Vegas the night before the Superb Owl. And I don't know what the final number was, but this was looking grim earlier.
Yeah.
This week. It was less than 1,000 tickets were sold.
Jesus. Yeah, we'll play Vegas the night before the Super Bowl. Yeah, there'll be a ton of people there. Crickets. Crickets.
So Blackpool Combat Club had their tag match with Esfinge or whatever and Star Jr. Okay. The real story is after the match, John Moxley grabbed the mic, said, you know, because BCC won, said, you know, take that message back to the CML locker room, you know, and then they said, any team can step to me and Claudio if they want to. FTR comes out and gets in the face of BCC.
Okay.
Mox pie faces Dax, and then we have a big brawl between the four guys. All the geeks and security folks run out to break it up.
Okay.
I could be very into that.
I mean, I figured BCC would just be, you know, scrapping with CMLL dudes for a while. But I know a lot of them are in New Japan because Fantastic Mania starts tomorrow. But, I mean, CMLL doesn't send everybody to Japan. There are some people. I mean,
they have a Friday night show every Friday night.
So,
So at the very least, I suppose they could just show up and beat down guys who aren't those who are a part of the feud just to be like, oh, they're sending a message or something.
Yeah.
Daniel Garcia defeated Shane Taylor. Both guys are really getting a push right now. So it's surprising that they put them against each other.
Yeah.
Garcia racking up some wins. Let's see. Eddie Kingston backstage. He challenged Brian Danielson officially to a Continental Crown title match for Revolution.
Okay.
And then Danielson, if he loses, has to shake Eddie Kingston's hand. So, it's a battle for respect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brian Cage had his match against his two Sloppy Joes, as he requested. Uh-huh. Those Sloppy Joes were the outrunners of Turbo Floyd and Truth Magnum.
It's a happy day for Marty.
Yes, they were accompanied by Chance the Gila Monster, who is the mascot for the NHL Vegas Golden Knights.
Uh-huh, okay.
Brian Cage kills both outrunners, and then Chance does the Prince Nana dance with Prince Nana. This pisses off Cage, and Cage beats down the mascot.
Okay. I love mascots interacting with pro wrestlers. It is a tried and true way to my heart.
Well, as he beat him down, Hook runs down, so it looks like we're getting a Hook Cage program.
Okay.
Undisputed Kingdom and Tomohiro Ishii were backstage with Lexi Nair. What a group. Taven and Benefit were mad about being dropped from Chaos a few years ago. And then Roddy Strong did the gimmick where he's like, you know what? If you win the belt, you got me. And talked about how he lost the ROH TV title to Ishii 6 years ago.
And Ishii just stood there because he understood every word of this.
Well, Roddy goes to shake his hand, and then Ishii pulls his hand back and walks away.
Should have just headbutted him.
I know, right? So Adam Copeland comes to the ring for his addresses the crowd moment.
Oh, great. He's retiring again. No, thanks for coming.
Shivani talked about how with Swerve and Hangman facing Samoa Joe at Revolution, Adam Copeland's third. So he has his pick of titles to challenge. Oh,
gee, I wonder who he's going to challenge.
Yeah, well, he said, if he was at Dynamite, he would have actually stopped the Young Bucks because, of course, he's friendly with Darby and Sting.
Yes.
He said, you know, all the other champions are booked except for Christian Cage. And Daniel Garcia comes out.
Okay.
Daniel Garcia is like, hey, we've both been having a lot of wins last week. I beat Christian in the 6-man tag last week. So if you want a TNT title shot, you got to go through me. So this Wednesday on Dynamite, it's going to be Adam Copeland and Daniel Garcia.
Okay. As long as Garcia wins.
Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale were backstage with Stokely Hathaway and Renee Paquette. They really, really want a match against Sky Blue and Julia Hart. They were demanding Stokely Hathaway signs it. And he says that Tony Khan has his number blocked, so he's unable to book the match.
I thought he was the booker of Ring of Honor. Couldn't he just book in Ring of Honor?
You know what? That's a great question. They have a Mania Week show that they've announced nothing for.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, do the thing, guys. Make it happen.
Look, I'm right here. I'm just saying.
Brody King and Mark Briscoe had a match.
Okay.
Wild Brawl. Brody ends up winning and then post-match pulls out a railroad spike and just keeps stabbing the head of Mark Briscoe.
Okay.
So we're getting a Brody-Mark Briscoe feud.
Well, he already beat him, so what's the what's the feud?
He smeared the blood on the cast on his hand. So that
was silver in the cast, huh?
Yeah, so that was a cool visual.
Okay.
It's Brian not very Keith. Hygienic. Very true. Brian Keith, who got signed last week.
Yeah, the Bounty Hunter.
The Bounty Hunter, he did a promo Bobby putting himself over. He had this line, which I loved. Whether you're good, bad, or ugly, you better be ready to pay up, sucker.
Oh, I love that.
That's such a good line.
Yeah, that's like a 70s blaxploitation Western there.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I love it.
Deonna Purrazzo defeated Kira Hogan.
Okay.
Tony Storm defeated Queen Aminata. Post-match, Tony announced she's going to be premiering her new film on Dynamite on Wednesday.
Okay.
Excuse me. And then the main event was Orange Cassidy against Tomohiro Ishii. OC retains. The match apparently was a little slow to get the crowd involved because they didn't know who Ishii was. I can hear Justin screaming now. Of course they fucking don't know who he is. But OC wins. The match did eventually get over. After the match, the Kingdom come out and they lay out Orange Cassidy with a pile driver. So the Kingdom got to be a main event angle for Collision. There is no Collision next week, as there is NBA All-Star Weekend. So no Collision. But this Wednesday on Dynamite, we get the premiere of Tony Storm's latest movie titled Wet Ink.
Oh, man.
We will hear from Hangman Page, Samoa Joe, and Swerve Strickland, presumably not all at the same time.
I mean, that would be entertaining, but
you know what? Just give them the whole like ESPN dudes who yell at each other about sports setup and just give them their own little box. Just let them yell at the same time. I think it's okay. It's the move. The kids are like it. Yeah. Sky Blue versus Willow Nightingale, Adam Copeland versus Daniel Garcia, and the Young Bucks of Matthew and Nicholas Jackson will go against Darius and Dante Martin, aka Top Flight. So
kind of weird to feed Top Flight to Young Bucks right now, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, also they could, you know, do a DQ finish. They so rarely do them in AEW. Yeah. They something like that.
I don't care for that.
Just beat the shit out of them. And, you know, one of the Martin brothers runs the razor and, you know, get another bloody suit. Like just keep doing it.
Just collecting bloody suits.
Yeah, just collecting all the bloody suits.
Yeah, or just be like the person who wears the same t-shirt to every Guar show, and it's just layers and layers of blood on there and or other bodily functions.
Chris, were you that guy?
I am that guy.
The Roughhouse Podcast is a weekly podcast fueled by coffee, pizza rolls, and the stench of dirty litter boxes. Follow Christoph and Marty on Twitter at RoughhouseSGW, at Facebook.com/TheRoughhousePodcast, and at Patreon.com/TheRoughhousePodcast for early access to episodes, exclusive podcasts, Roughhouse Redos, and Roughhouse Divided movie trivia games. New episodes drop every single Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Subscribe, motherfuckers!
This is the Roughhouse podcast with Justin and Christoph.
That's it.
Fuck Christoph. He's terrible with his information. Okay. Hey, this is The Rock. Shut your mouth, jabronis, and listen up, because this is the Roughhouse podcast with
Marty
and my least favorite man on the planet, Christoph.